UK Wine Show, show number 92, Ernst Lucen on Germany. In this week's show...
And I must say, we have a huge success, especially now in the last 6, 7, 8 years, you know. I mean, Riesling is hot again.
And in the news this week, top stories from the climate change conference in Barcelona and Fairtrade Fortnight gets co-op backing.
G'day! Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 92 for the 22nd of February 2008. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we're talking with Ernst Lucen, winemaker from Germany, and Decanter's Man of the Year 2005. We talked to Ernst about German wines and what's new for Germany. At this stage, I'd like to apologise for last week's show going out very late. I think we got it up on Tuesday in the end. It was recorded early and almost ready to go, but some last-minute changes and a logistics nightmare while I was editing it in Spain meant it came out late. So, sorry for that. But before we get into the interview with Ernst Lucen, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. Grape growing is going to change in the future because of global warming. That's the message that was delivered by speakers at the Climate Change and Wine Conference in Barcelona last weekend. Bordeaux is one place that will have to focus on different grapes as the climate gets warmer, with grapes like Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot making way for varieties such as Petit Verdot, Carmenere and Malbec. It's thought that some areas won't even be able to sustain grape growing. Meanwhile, over in Germany, Ernst Lucen is buying and replanting higher altitude vineyards that were abandoned 10 to 15 years ago because they were too high for successful grape growing in the Mosel. These sites will be used as an acid reserve to blend and add crispness to wines. And over in Riverland, Australia, the outlook is even less bright, with increasing temperatures likely to make the area unsustainable as a wine region in years to come. Next up, the future is square, according to wine producer Banrock Station, who are extolling the virtues of the Tetra Pak at the conference. Tetra Paks use 80% less energy to produce than glass, and being square are more efficient to transport. Not only that, like glass, they can be recycled when you finish with them. In the UK, the 1 litre cartons of Banrock Station that Tesco sell are recycled into egg containers. And finally this week, the Co-op is promoting Fairtrade Fortnight by knocking 20% off all its own label and branded Fairtrade wines. The company is the UK's leading supermarket for Fairtrade and is set to sell over 370,000 cases of the 2007 vintage. That's up 35% on the previous year. And it's all good news for the Fairtrade producers because the Co-op is matching the social premium they receive from the foundation and thereby doubling the income they generate from the sale of the wines. This money is then used to fund special community projects, such as giving households access to clean water supplies and providing daycare facilities for the children of the wine cooperatives. Fairtrade Fortnight kicks off on the 25th of February 2008. That's all from me this week, but don't forget you can get more detail on these stories on the news homepage of our website 3050.co.uk. Back over to you, Chris.
Cheers, Jane. Climate change is a huge issue for the world and wine. Wine is the canary in the mine for agricultural industry. Winemakers have carved the world up into regions based on climate, and some grape varieties are particularly sensitive to climate. The early changes to climate have mostly been positive, with Bordeaux and Germany producing more consistent vintages over the last 10 years. But as the climate changes, problems are going to occur. I made quite a few interviews on climate change when I was down in Barcelona at the Climate Change Conference last week. I think Richard Smart, world-famous viticulturalist, summed it up very well when he said, "We know the best terroirs of today, but we don't know the best terroirs of tomorrow." So things are going to change, and wine regions with big reputations may find their style changing considerably. Next week, we start a series looking at climate change in wine. We start by talking with Pancho Campo, organiser of the Climate Change Conference, but I've spoken to viticulturalists, climatologists and winemakers. We find out what's happening in wine regions of the world and what's going to be done to manage it in those wine regions. And what new regions are going to be coming on? I spoke with Tony Shirley at the conference and have an interview with him on Tetra Paks. But the big thing for me was the CO2 emissions, or the lack of, in the production. Fair enough, they're not as easily recycled as, say, glass, but they are recyclable. But glass isn't green in the UK anyway. And with a huge savings in space and weight and transportation, they do appear to be significantly more environmentally friendly than glass. And, according to Tony, they have a very similar performance to plastic corks when it comes to shelf life. That is, about 12 months. So we'll catch up with Tony later on in the year. But at the moment, this month's poll is all to do with climate change and the green debate. These are hot topics in the wine industry, and the poll question is, have you changed the way you buy wine to help reduce your carbon footprint? The answers are, yes, completely. I do everything I can to reduce carbon footprint when shopping. Yeah, quite a bit. I think about it a lot, and I try to buy products I know that are environmentally friendly. Yes, a little, but the information available on carbon footprint of wine is extremely limited. And no, I don't think about it in relation to wine at all. Or the last one, no, not at all. I don't think it makes any difference in the long term. Do have your say. You can go to our website, ukwineshow.co.uk, and on the right-hand side, there's the poll. You can email me if you've got some nice comments at chris.scott@ukwineshow.co.uk. I did have some nice comments while I was in Spain. One from Megan Marcus, a winemaker at Dry Hills, who liked the show a couple of weeks ago on Greg Hay from Otago and is looking forward to the climate change conference. I also had a nice one from Nick, who is a student at Plumpton, who liked the show with Ollie Smith and wants me to do a show on his favourite wine, Grüner Veltlinger, which I quite like as well. Nick is a big fan of GV, Grüner Veltlinger, and if you live in the UK, he recommends one from Waitrose with the great name of, I hope I pronounce correctly, Gittersdorfer Musebergen, made by Wingert Felsner, which I plan on trying in the next week or so. The reason for this week's show was actually because of a request from a person in, I think it was Norway, way back near show 5 when we did the interview with Wines of Germany. And she requested that we do some interviews on German producers. Sorry it's taken so long time coming, but here we are now. I actually have two interviews with Ernst, one on Riesling, which I'm going to release in 2 to 3 months as part of a 2-part series on Riesling with Ernst and New Zealand winemaker John Forrest. So stay tuned for that. And, of course, this week's show on Germany. So, next up, we have the interview with Ernst Lucen. Controversial, outspoken, but well-respected. We talk to him about German wines. Hi, I'm here with Ernst Lucen, the Decanter Man of the Year 2005. But I heard you almost lost the name of your company, Dr. Lucen. Do you want to tell us the wee story there?
Well, that was a little story when I took over from my father. You know how it is, you know, the typical little generation conflict, you know. My father did it his way. I wanted to do it my way. And my father came up then with this wonderful idea and said, look, son, I'm very proud of you that you take over the winery and then you... Yeah, wonderful how you're running it and fantastic. But you see, I think you have to pay me a little bit more rent, you know. I said, well, why? Why should I have to? Yeah, you know, because you're using my name on the label, Dr. Lucen, and you never finished your PhD, you know. I started archaeology, started my PhD, but never finished it, you know. Yep. And so I said, well, you really think that I have to pay you more? He said, yeah, I think you have to give me a little bit of an extra rent here, you know? And I said, look, Dad, you know, you still remember that I just 2-3 weeks ago I married, you know? I said, yes, my dad, wonderful girl. I really like your wife. Fantastic. I said, you know, do you still remember that Eva, my wife, has a PhD? Yeah, wonderful. She's very clever. And you still remember that Eva took on our name? Yeah, this is also very rare nowadays, he said. No? I said, so, see it that way, the Dr. Lucen on the label, it's not you anymore, it's Eva.
And did you have to pay more rent? You got away with it.
No, I came away. He just said,
excellent. What we're going to be talking about today is German wines. Mm-hmm. And you've had a bit of a renaissance recently. It seemed, well, from reading the press and the media, it seems like Germany's finally coming back to life.
Oh, yeah. I'm very, very happy about that. You know, I mean, we have been going through quite a depressive time, especially in this country, you know, in the late 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, when, I mean, German wine was completely associated with the Liebfraumilch, Plunan, Plektauer, whatever these brands had been called, you know. Mm. And basically, Germany pretty much lost their reputation in these days, being a bulk producer, cheap wines. And from that point of view, I must say, in the early 90s, then in the mid-90s, a lot of wine growers, young winemakers in Germany really put their feet back to the ground and have been working very hard to renovate the reputation of the great Riesling grape variety, which is basically German's most famous grape variety, you know. And I must say, we have a huge success, especially now in the last 6, 7, 8 years, you know. I mean, Riesling is hot again. If you look around the world, you know, and we sell to 60 countries, you know, America is hot. I mean, there's not enough Riesling anymore. Even the American Riesling, they don't produce enough American Riesling.
Really?
Yeah, to serve the market.
What do you think is driving it? Is it the sweeter styles or the drier styles that are going into America? And is it really demand from
it's
America?
It's all the style, because if you see, you find home for all the styles. I mean, that's possibly one of a little bit of a handicap to make it as the mass very popular, you know? Because Riesling is such a versatile grape variety. And which other grape variety you can produce in so many styles? You can produce a Riesling in a fruity style, in a sweeter style, with low alcohol. You can produce it in a noble sweet style. You can produce it in a dry style. You know, you can produce it in a medium dry style, a little bit more weighty, a little bit less weighty, very elegant, with a lot of finesse, or pretty weighty. And so you have all these kind of chances, you know, to churn Riesling in a certain style, you know, that might often confuse the people because they have to learn to read the label. The label gives you an idea what kind of wine you have in front of you, but it makes it difficult, you know.
Yeah.
But I think, on the other hand, I think the people are willing to learn nowadays, you know. I mean, they're going away from a simple Chardonnay. They want to see more versatility with wine nowadays, too. And, you know, you see it even with Chardonnay. Now, non-oak Chardonnay, yep. Oak Chardonnay, different styles, you know.
Sure.
People going away from one branded style. They want to see more the versatility. And I think this is Riesling. It's just fitting into this niche.
Where does the bulk of this your German Riesling's going? Is it going into the UK, America?
Well, I mean, we have a huge renaissance for our Rieslings in Germany again, you know.
Yep.
I mean, Germany also 20, 30 years ago nearly didn't drink any German wines, you know. It was all imported, French, Italian, you know. So Germany itself, all the restaurants, the fine restaurants nowadays in Germany, 50% of the wine list is German wines again, and definitely Riesling, the German Riesling is a big part of it, you know.
Yep.
Because, but you need, Germany has also a tradition for Pinot Gris and Pinot Blanc and Pinot Noir.
Yep.
And Silvaner, you know. And so these wines are also very popular in Germany, you know. But Riesling definitely had been coming back very, very strongly in Germany, but we see it also in the US, we see it in Asia, we see it in, I mean, I'll tell you, in Taiwan and Korea, and I was just recently in China again, you know. I mean, people like this style, especially Asia. They like rather this lighter, fruity style, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Europe, I would say, in Germany, possibly, and so Austria, you know, south of Europe, you know, they like rather the drier style, you know.
Yep.
So you see that every area, you know, has a certain preferences of style, you know. That you
sure.
definitely see. And here in the UK, I see that both styles work. I must say, we can, as much we can have, do the fruity style here, the lighter fruity style, the dry style works also, you know. But you have to address it to the right people, you know. In the restaurant trade, possibly more a little bit the drier style, you know. And people who want to have it as an aperitif or as a summer drink, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, on the terrace, you know, beautiful weather. Then you like a lovely light 7.5% Riesling, zippy,
yeah.
You know, and, you know, fantastic acidity and cleansing, you know. So, I mean, again, you have to address the different styles and tell the people what they are suitable for.
One of the trends in the UK at the moment is maybe just to see a wee bit lighter in alcohol.
Yeah.
And Riesling can go down to that 8% quite comfortably.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do you think that's a trend that you're starting to see in your sales figures,
I tell you, I hope so, that it will be a trend, you know, because I personally, I'm totally fed up with these high alcohol wines, you know, because the trend had been for me going far too far, you know, with pushing wines to 14.5% alcohol. I mean, you saw even wines with 15 and 15.5 alcohol, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
Sorry, I can't go through a whole bottle of such a wine. I mean, don't want to say that it is a bad wine, you know. Don't misunderstand me. It is only difficult to, even if it is a wonderful wine, it's only difficult for me to go through a whole bottle or a second bottle, you know.
Yeah.
And I tell you, and it is much more refreshing and nicer to have a bottle of wine with say, 12% alcohol in the dry style or 12.5, or a fruity wine like the Rieslings we produce with 7%, 8% or 9% alcohol. I mean, it's easier to drink, you know.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't produce a great wine with low alcohol. You can produce. It is only a question how you work your viticulture, you know?
Because these lighter styles, normally I associate lighter wines with being a lot sweeter wines.
Oh, well, they are usually sweeter wines. But you can also produce dry wines, you know, with, say, 11.5% alcohol. It is only a question of viticulture, you know? And so, from that point of view, I hope it will be a trend going a little bit lower with alcohol, you know, going back to the older times, you know, when a claret was 12.5 alcohol than 14 or whatever.
What do you think is going to be the big things maybe in the next couple of years from Germany, or any trends that you think will really come through?
From Germany?
Yeah, well, to do to do with yourself but focusing
on
Germany.
Well, you know what we're doing? I mean, as you said, we really see now a wonderful Riesling recovery, you know, and renaissance or whatever you want to call it, you know. This is fantastic. This is absolutely fantastic. But I see also a wonderful future for the other grape varieties in Germany, you know, because people don't know that there are wonderful Pinot Gris, you know, and wonderful Pinot Blanc. And I tell you, I love Silvana. Silvana is such a beautiful grape variety, especially for the dry style.
Yeah.
You can produce great dry Silvana with a great balance, you know. So they're not too acidic. They have just the perfect balance and a kind of a pear fruit, you know. Pear fruit, delicate, wonderful, delicate and elegant and a harmony as a dry style. And I think this is a completely underrated grape variety. It will be never a huge bust, but I think you can do something with Silvana, and we just started to show Silvana in America to the top sommeliers. I tell you, they all are absolutely excited. Said, God, I don't know about Silvana at all. And that's a traditional grape variety. We know it from Elsass, you know?
Yeah.
Silvana, you know?
Yeah, Silvana. That's Silvana, isn't it? It's a cross hybrid.
No. Silvana is an old traditional grape variety.
Oh,
No.
It's a very it's a hybrid old. For some reason.
No, what you mean is Müller-Thurgau, Riesling Mal Silvana. It's a crossing. Riesling and Silvana was a crossing which made Müller-Thurgau, you know?
Oh, okay.
And so, no, Silvana is a very old traditional grape variety in Switzerland, south of Germany. And then east of Germany, on the Rhine River, Elsass, you know. And it was always this kind of reputation the same, you know. In the old days, they used it as a mess variety, you know. High yielding, for cheap wines, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But if you grow the Silvana the right way, you can produce the most lovely dry wines, you know. And so this is something I think you always have to get something new on the table, you know, to get people interested in something traditional, because I don't like these new crossings and so, you know, because there's still so many traditional grape varieties out there which you can produce in such a wonderful quality. So I rather rediscover old traditional grape varieties.
What about a strange one is Rondo. It's grown in the UK. It's from Germany originally.
Rondo? That's a new crossing.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I mean, I have no clue.
We'll cut that out.
Rondo. It sounds like a dog's name.
Okay. Mosel. Or as it used to be called, Mosel Sarawa?
Mosel Zaruva,
which
had been, you know, because that's the three rivers. So the Mosel was the main river, and Zar and Ruva are the little, how do you call it, the tributaries,
yeah.
Tributaries, you know, Zar and Ruva. But they changed it now.
I know.
It's only Mosel now, you know.
And how did that go down in Germany? Is that all right?
Well, yeah, I mean, okay, the people who grow their wines on the Ruva and the people who grow their wines on the Zar, they're a little pissed off, you know. because they are not allowed to use their area anymore on the label.
Oh, true.
Yeah, because they're all Mosel now, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So from that point of view, I don't know if it is fair or not fair. I mean, it's too much. I think it makes it in the export market much more easier.
Yeah.
Because nobody in the export market always knew Mosel Saar Ruwer. They know Mosel, but they never knew what is Saar and what is Ruwer, you know.
Yeah,
we
sure.
know it in Germany, sure. But for the export market, I think it makes it much more easier too, because then the people immediately know, oh, that's a Mosel, you know, that comes from this area, you know.
Sure, sure.
And so the Saar Ruwer wines are very, very similar to the Mosel wines.
So
you know?
They've called the other ones Saar Ruwer now?
No, they have to sell it under Mosel.
They still sell it in Mosel. Oh, Mosel's, what do they sell it? If you're from making wine in
the Saar and Ruwer, they have to call it Mosel.
Oh, they still call it Mosel though, so why are they upset about it?
Yeah, they get rid of the Saar Ruwer on the label, and they have to sell. The whole area becomes Mosel now.
Oh, okay, I'm with you. Okay, so, yep, I'm with you.
The whole area is now Mosel, so they are not allowed to use their Saar and Ruwer anymore.
And have you seen an increase in German winemakers? There was stories in the press about young German winemakers now going back into vineyards. Is that really a trend, or is...
Well, you see, because it's so much better, you know, and people can make money again, they really come back and they like to go back, you know, because they make money again, you know. And, you know, if you make money, then you like to go back into the business again. And you see that less vineyards are given up now, you know, and people rather go back to traditional sites and want to keep it and want to do great wines. I mean, there's a lot of things going on in Germany with the young winemakers. I must really say it's really hot.
Okay, we'll wrap it up there.
Thank you.
Ernst, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks.
Hope you enjoyed that interview with Ernst. He's a great guy and heaps of fun. I got a chance to catch up with him again and his lovely wife Eva, the doctor in Dr. Lucin in Barcelona. He told me how he's been buying old abandoned vines at higher points in the Mosel where it's cooler. And he's going to use these cooler regions to make wine as a blending component for his wines as a sort of acidity reserve just in case it gets too hot. Over the next few weeks, I hope to show what's going to happen to your favourite wines due to climate change. And next week, we kick off the interview with Pancho Campo, the organiser of the Climate Change Conference. So until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.